Hi guys, my name is Amanda K. Thornton, and you are listening to the One Up with Amanda K. podcast. This is a series called Message of Hope, Stories from Struggle to Success. You can see these live recordings on Facebook, Instagram, under my name, Amanda K. Thornton, and you can also see them on the YouTube channel by typing in amina.media in your browser. I'm so glad you guys are here on the lives. We do have a few people here, so which is really exciting because this is like midday for me. I'm not sure where everybody else is logging into, but we do have a global audience. I have people from Sweden, from Finland, from the UK, from like the Netherlands, and it's been really exciting to, you know, connect with everyone worldwide through this platform. So I have on here Darren, and Darren, can you pronounce your last name for us?
It's Verasamy.
Verasamy?
Verasamy, yep.
I like that. I like the flow, Verasamy. So Darren Verasamy is here, and we're recording episode 30 today. Now, Darren came on, and he wants to share his story about fixing what is wrong and focusing on what is right. Is that a true, accurate representation of that?
That is true in terms of the journey that we've gone through, absolutely. And, you know, and I'll be able to talk a little bit about more about what I do, what 34 Strong does in the process with helping make that a reality for organizational culture. But I know, you know, we also want to understand the entrepreneur's journey as well. So
yeah, definitely. So wherever you want to start off, I'm just going to turn you up here. My volume is a little low. All right. So I can hear you a little bit better myself. So Darren, you didn't say we. Now, we is in you and a partner or you and a company. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, so it's I can tell the story if you want on how I got into the company side and kind of that journey that I was on, that struggle, that challenge that we have to go through to make it a reality. So the we is, yeah, I do have an outstanding business partner. My business partner is a gentleman named Brandon Miller, and he's written a book with his wife called Play to Their Strengths, where it focuses on strengths-based parenting and how we can focus on what's right with our kids and raise our kids that way. I'll talk to you more about that because that actually ties into our whole 34 Strong mission. But we have
okay,
a whole
yeah, we can
team.
Cover that. We can cover that a little bit later, and then
yeah, we'll get into that later. But for me, personally, you know, I went through the journey, Amina, of many, many years ago. So 34 Strong was founded back in 2013. And the fascinating part was in December of 2012, I was seated on a balcony on the Big Island of Hawaii. And I'm sitting there that morning. It was the first trip I was taking with my wife and my daughter, who was 4 months old at the time.
Aww.
So I'm just relishing this beautiful little person that's there. We'd been going on walks in the morning. Just me and her. She's sitting on her baby Bjorn, and she was just taking in everything. I mean,
she's 4 months, right? 4 months. 4 months.
4 months.
Oh, yeah. Baby. Yeah, little thing.
Little thing.
My kids are grown now. So yeah, I miss those
moments. Yeah. Yeah. So we were walking along, and one of those mornings we just come up, and my wife was resting in the morning, and my daughter and I had just come up, and we just grabbed a seat on the lanai, and we're overlooking the Pacific Ocean, you know. And she's just laying in my lap, like looking up at me, and I'm holding her fingers, and I was eating a little bit of a papaya at the same time. And my wife was seated right across from me. She was having a cup of coffee, and I said something. I don't even know what it was. And you probably can remember this. You've got three children, right?
I do.
It was the moment that my daughter laughed out loud for the first time, right?
There's
so my daughter laughed out loud. It was so beautiful and terrifying. And a lot of people are like, what? How could your daughter laughing out loud for the first time be terrifying? It was amazing because in that moment, Amina, I saw nothing but pure potential. I saw in her, like, I was like, you're going to talk. You're going to end up laughing more. You're going to tell your own jokes. You're going to make us laugh. And she's done lots of that. You're going to play soccer. You're going to go to school, do all these things. And then what ended up happening, the terrifying portion, was I looked at her and I said, Darren, what happened to yours? What happened to your potential? What happened to you? And it was in that moment that I realized a lot of things, this juxtaposition of emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at that time, I was commuting. I live in the Sacramento area of California, and I was commuting down to the San Francisco Bay Area. And that was just to the office that I was at. It was actually, I think, over 100 miles one way.
So how long is that?
Most mornings it was at least 2 hours to get there. And if I left at the wrong time in the afternoon, it would take much longer than that.
That's the same thing here. Being in Fredericksburg, everybody commutes, even though they bring all the money into the area, which is wonderful because we have a beautiful area. But since they all pretty much commute here, it's like 3 hours to get to DC. That usually takes 45 minutes, but it's just so much congestion. That's crazy.
That traffic can be insane. So I was sitting there and realizing in that moment, here I am on this vacation with the two most important people of my life, yet I wasn't living a life that was making them the two most important people in my life. And that really hit me hard. And I did have to ask myself, at one point somebody looked at me, my parents looked at me, friends, family looked at me and saw that potential in me as a child. And I was doing things. I was checking the boxes. I mean, I'd followed all of the lines. I'd gone to school. I'd gone to college, gotten an advanced degree, and I was climbing the corporate ladder, and I was feeling completely disengaged in my work. And at the same time, I was teaching at a local college here, and I was helping open the door for entrepreneurs and helping them develop their businesses and watching that come to fruition. But I wasn't doing it for myself. So I came back from that trip, and I knew something had to change. And my mind shifted after that trip. And I leaned in, and before I knew it, 3 months later, I was actually introduced to my business partner, Brandon, through a really close friend of ours. We were actually in mastermind group together, and I ended meeting Brandon through that particular process. And we had this vision of the world, because I had seen how work places could be places that uplifted us and created energy for us, and we came home and we felt good, like we made a difference and had camaraderie on a team. And I knew how that changed me, because I was actually living in, at the same time that Kira laughed out loud, my daughter, I was living in that space. The college, I felt that way, and in my work environment at the construction company, I felt the complete opposite. You're just trying to survive the day.
Well, so, you're commuting like 4 to 6 hours a day. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah. It was that way, but there was just a lot of employee disengagement. There was a lot of things that were being done where trust didn't run high. And I came to realize, I was like, I can either just continue to check the box, collect a paycheck and be part of the problem, or I can go and become part of the solution. Because I knew there was a better way, because I helped to architect those better ways in other organizations I had worked with, including at the college that I had been teaching at. So I basically went from there and was like, I got to do something about this. And that was the beautiful, beautiful part in all of it. And the rest is history. Within a few months of that, again, your mind changed, and then you start attracting in what you want. And it's no easy process, but it was completely well worth it, even though I didn't have a lot of ideas as to what it would be, what it would look like at that given time.
Yeah, because you didn't have any other skills that you could play off of at that time either, other than unless you wanted to work fully in teaching others, I guess, entrepreneurship. But that's such a small niche, right? So it's not like I'm going to do this full time, and you know.
And that was the irony. I was teaching students about entrepreneurship, but I wasn't an entrepreneur myself, right? In the college, I was the closest to dabbling in entrepreneurship, from actually being in a company role where I'd actually grown lines of business. But it's very different what you deal with on that side versus when you're out on your own,
fully.
So that's what ended up happening. And I ended up taking a full-time role at the college. And within 3 months of taking that full-time role and cutting back my time in the construction company, it ended up opening the door, and I became an entrepreneur.
That's great. So that is the same business that you're doing today?
That's completely, 34 Strong.
Really cool.
Brandon and I founded it. And so here's the thing. We had this vision. We wanted to change the workplace experience. Like, our whole concept of what we get into is become a great place to work. We believe that any workplace can be, everybody deserves a great place to work, and that any workplace can be great. But here's the thing about culture. No matter how big your team is or how small it is, right? We've worked with large organizations. We've worked with small businesses. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, you can either create your culture by intention and design or by accident, but you will have culture. And when we create it by accident, it can completely impact who you're attracting in, or you attract the right people in, then all of a sudden, you know, a month later, they're jumping out, and it just feels like it accelerates the stress level that we feel in our businesses or on our teams. But our bigger reach, Amina, was not only connecting the dots for people in their businesses. It was the ripple impact. What we thought of, like I take you back to that moment with my daughter.
Yeah.
What would it be like if she lived a whole life where she saw her dad going to work completely miserable in his work? What's her perspective going to be? Now, my son, Preston, what would his perspective be in going through? So how do we change this?
They would see work. Yeah, work as something bad, a bad thing. Yeah.
And there's plenty that are already seeing that, right? Like, I mean, we have we've got, you know, the range on disengagement just in the United States alone is roughly 65% of our workforce is disengaged in some capacity. What
you mean it disengage, like they're not fully putting their effort into it? They're just doing the motion.
I'm collecting a paycheck, you know, if I'm disengaged. I'm there. I'm doing the basic work that I need to do.
They're on Facebook, maybe. They may be on Facebook during where they're supposed to be, like, taking care of customers or something like that.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. And then you get to active disengagement, and folks are actively disengaged or recruiting people, right? And it doesn't build trust. It doesn't build compassion. But a lot of the things that we want to have on the best teams that we've been a part of, those are missing. And we see that, and it shows up with us and how we feel. You know, when you're working in an environment like that, it shows up. It shows up with you in your drive home. It shows up with you at your dinner table at night when you're trying to go to bed. If you've had a bad boss or bad just organization where the culture is very toxic and those things, it's with you all the time. And that wears on how we're showing up in other areas of our life. If we shift that balance, it completely shifts how we show up in other areas of our life and the impact that we can make, the energy that we can give. It moves us from a mindset, Amina, of surviving the day to thriving the day. And it can be a long road to go through. It can be challenging. It can be scary, but we got to look in that mirror and say, what does it look like if I don't go that way? And that was exactly what happened for me cognitively when my daughter laughed out loud for the first time. So it was a gift.
Yeah, I like how you said that, you know, you're going to have culture no matter what, even if you form it or if it just kind of happens, like you're just attracting the right people or the wrong people. And then you're just like, I'm not really sure, but this is amazing, or this is not who I want to be in my my business or around me and what I'm doing. And you can control that. So I think that's really interesting how you said it that way, because I've seen this being a part of groups and organizations where some groups, they just all click. They all have like the same kind of, I wouldn't say personality, but they all like seem to mesh really well. Like they're totally different people, but they just have this harmony between them. And then you see other groups where they're scattered and nobody knows their direction. They don't feel like they're noticed. They don't feel like they're being challenged, you know. And then there's that where people want to leave, or there's like that conflict where they're trying to find somebody to blame too.
That's right.
So, yeah.
That's right. And it's interesting what you said. It's not a function. I really want to highlight something that you said. I mean, it's actually really important. It's not a function of each person was the same. It's actually a function of each person's different. There's this beautiful African proverb. It's at the core of the work that we do. And it's simply this: if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go with others. Our differences are an advantage. Our differences truly are an advantage and give us an opportunity to come together around them. When you talked about just some of the elements on the front end, being able to fix what's wrong by focusing on what's right. When we think about that, a lot of times our natural approach is to do what? To think that our greatest opportunity for growth lies in focusing on our areas of weakness. Mm-hmm. And the whole point with that is it actually does not lie there. Our greatest opportunity for growth and excellence lies within finding where our natural talents are and growing around that, and managing around our weaknesses. We all have certain things that no matter how many times we do it, that we've been doing them our whole lives, and we still don't love it. And it still makes our tummies turn just thinking about it. Yeah. Hey, listen, I write, my handwriting has been terrible my whole life. It was my failing subject in school. If I had to take a handwriting test now, heck, I can't even read half the stuff I write down.
Oh,
but
no.
We have things like that. And when we can understand that we don't have to be all things to all people, but really finding those key areas that we can shine and elevate, this is really important for us as business owners, as entrepreneurs as well, but even outside of that in our lives, it's important to find those pieces because you can actually find the things that help you manage around that. And the
I love how you say that. Yeah, because I love how you say that too, that you really, it's not fixing the areas you're weak at. And there's a lot of people that I'm thinking of right now that have mentioned this over and over and over again. I'll name two. So Warren Buffett says he does not want to do any other investments than investing in businesses that he knows, right? Like he studied, he's been doing the same thing forever, decades. And he's not willing to, say, invest in other endeavors because he is comfortable where he's at and he knows that it works, right? So it's something he's really good at and he focuses on. He's not trying to diversify like outside of that, right? He sticks with what he's good at and just makes it the best of the best of the best. And we see that he is. And then the other one I want to point out, let me think of his name, Maurice Sedeck. He was an illustrator. He did Where the Wild Things Are. And Maurice Sedeck said that, you know, he made Where the Wild Things Are because he only knew how to draw monsters. He didn't know how to draw anything else. So he drew what he knew. And it's one of the best beloved children's books of all time. So, you know, if you are passionate about what you're doing, you don't have to worry about diversifying out of that. Just do more of that and be the best that you can be.
And that's the whole thing. That's, I think this is a really important piece too. A lot of times we end up trying to be more of who we're not, as opposed to becoming more of who we are. A lot of times as well, particularly for entrepreneurs, it's easy for us to actually undervalue the things that we do incredibly well. And when we find ourselves, this is an important just pulse check. When you find yourself saying anybody could do that or it's no big deal and you're getting your business launched, you're getting things going, that's actually a great point to call time out on yourself. Most times, that's actually a sign of your unique talent, of your unique value that you bring. Just because it comes really easy to you and we think that anybody could do it, that's usually a tell that it's so easy and so fluid for you. That's one of your tells of huge value. Sometimes the things that frustrate us the most, like why can't this person do that? Or anybody should be able to do that. It's a great chance to pause and say, through my natural talents, my natural patterns of thought, feeling, and behavior that can be productively applied. That's what we think of when we're thinking of talent and we're using the Clifton Strengths Finder assessment as kind of our baseline for that definition. But again, our natural patterns of thought, feeling, and behavior that can be productively applied. When we think about that, we have to realize that comes so natural and intrinsic to us, we can end up missing the boat and undervaluing what we do.
Because we think everybody can do it. We're just like, anybody can do this. Why is it valuable, right? Why does everybody think this is hard? It's so easy. You could hire anybody to take my place doing this. Yeah, I can resonate with, you know, things that I can say that I do. And then people always ask me, like, I would say about every 2 or 3 days, I get the same thing. They're just like, wow, you connect with people really well. You're really good at talking to people. You're really good at, you know, doing this media stuff. And I'm just like, well, at first I wasn't, but then it came natural to me too. I didn't have to think about it. I was like, I had the equipment. I could just start it. You know, I didn't be like, okay, well, how do I work that? Or how do I put that together? And I'm like, no, I know how to do it. Let me, you know, I want to do it. So let me put this together and actually do what I would love to do, right? And so I do see your point on that. So if you find it easy, just because it's easier for you, it can be hard for others. And that is a strength that you possess. So
focus on your strengths and step into your greatness. There are gifts, and our gifts are meant to be shared and going through. And the same way that we want to, you know, focus on playing to our strengths to really accelerate our greatness, to do that really effectively, we have to actually own our weaknesses, right? We have to own our gap areas, the things that we don't do well, because what that does is it gives us the opportunity to identify exactly how we're going to play to our strengths and manage all the other really critical areas of our life, of our business, for organization that need to be filled in that others can do. The differences really are an advantage. I'll share with you a little analogy. I mean, you mentioned I'm out in California. I'm in the Sacramento area, but the Golden Gate Bridge, right? We've all seen it. It's the red bridge. It's got the two towers. And when we think about the Golden Gate Bridge, Amina, we see the cables are pulling. And the cables are not pulling in the same direction. They're pulling in different directions. And those cables are not slack. They're actually tense. There's a high level of tension in them. And the whole point here is there is that healthy amount of tension that's pulling in different directions. And that's what gives rise to the bridge. That's what gives the strength to the bridge. And that actually gives us support so that the bridge can stand strong, so it can support what it needs to. And sometimes when we're around others with very, very different talents than us, it can feel frustrating. Like, why can they not do this? Why can they not do that?
But it I can't offload.
Exactly. But it allows us to give rise to those best ideas and in going through and in finding out that impact. So that's an important way of thinking about this.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to ask you about this unique question that before you came on, I just so let everybody know, I asked my guests to give me some pinpoints on what we should be covering. And Darren mentioned that, let me look at the exact phrasing of this because I thought it was really unique. Can our pursuit of well-roundness actually be detrimental?
Mm-hmm.
What would that mean? Like, what would be the ideology around that?
We've got to debunk the myth of well-roundedness. It's a myth. The more that we focus on being well-rounded, the more time, guess what we have to do? Spend an inordinate amount of time on our areas of our weakness. And what happens is we can start having our areas atrophy in our areas of strength because we're investing far more time in our areas of weakness. So when we look at being well-rounded, we become really good at a bunch of things, but we actually never get to the place where we stand out because there's a whole bunch of people.
Okay, so it's basically great operators. Covering. Yeah, okay.
It ties right into those areas. And you talk about Warren Buffett. So there's a story with Warren Buffett where his pilot once, right? He gets onto his aircraft, his pilot is talking to him and says, "You know, Warren, like, how can you give me some advice? Like, how do you get to the level of what you've done?" So he tells the pilot a story, something along these lines. I'm paraphrasing it, so I might have these slightly off, okay?
Yeah.
But he tells the pilot to say, make a list of 25 things that you absolutely love, that you think are really cool and really important in your life. So the pilot's like, cool. And then, so he goes out, he does that. And then Warren Buffett then says, okay, I think the next day they're flying back somewhere. He goes, okay, you made that list? He says, yes. Warren Buffett tells him to draw a line. I think it's under the number, the fifth one, or rank them. And then under the fifth one, draw a line under that. And he goes, let go of everything else. What you're willing to let go of is what's going to propel you into your
greatness.
Okay,
so let me get this. So what was he writing down exactly? What did he
write down? He was writing down like 25 things that he wanted to do, achieve, become in his life. All these things, right? So he was like, he wanted to, all these different areas. He wanted to be a pilot. He wanted to be a musician. He wanted to be a writer. He wanted to do all these different things. And Warren told him, just break that down to your list of five and focus on those and let go of the other things. Becoming more of who we are is importantly a function of letting go of who we're not and being okay with that. That's where the challenge happens because we oftentimes want to be involved in all these things. They're good, but are they the greatest return on our time invested? And that's the piece that we really need to think about as we're working through this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't know if you read the book. Let me think of the name right off the top of my head here. Let me think of it real fast. I know it's a Napoleon Hill book, but it's not
Think and Grow Rich.
No, it's not Think and Grow Rich. It's another one. I can't think of it right now. But basically, he talks about, you know, the harmony between people and how, you know, if we have that mastermind, right, we can grow exponentially faster. So if we're all like, it's the same thing like we've been talking about, but I really like it because he really narrows it down. Not only, he's really good at crafting stories, but also describing why things should work like that and how they work in the way nature works and natural law works. And I thought it was really interesting because he even, it was a lot like what we're talking about now, but when we have that harmony between us, that we all are on the same mission, then we can grow so much faster because we're not in a competitive mode for one. And also we're on the same mission, right? So we're all just like, we want to advance this and we all want to grow in our own strengths in this, but also in saying that it's not a lot of people. It's really, he was really focusing on just like you and one other person and up to five. Because after that, you know, then it gets too overwhelming. People, you know, usually lose the disconnect the further out you go. So I think that's interesting how, you know, you've touched on it. And then, of course, Napoleon Hill is somebody that I admire, too, in all his works. I really love all his books, and I often listen to him all the time. But, yeah, it's definitely really cool.
I keep Think and Grow Rich is kind of on a constant reread cycle every year. I'm kind of process of
you guys,
rereading it.
Anybody who listens to Think and Grow Rich, amazing. But you have to get the book that started Think and Grow Rich, which was The Law of Success. It was a program he made to teach others about success. And it's actually Think and Grow Rich came after Law of Success. And it is like the cliff note of Law of Success. So you have to get the Law of Success, and you have to get Outwitting the Devil, because it'll totally shift the way you think about yourself and how you
just expanded my reading list. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. It's one of it's his last book that he made, Outwitting the Devil, because it was very controversial at the time, because it does mention the devil. But his family, actually his great grandson, I think, actually published it, or it was many years later after his passing, because his wife didn't even want to publish it at the time because it was very controversial still. So yeah, it's very interesting because this is his last book, and it really makes you understand him as a person too, like a biography in a way, and how he thought about stuff. So I really recommend it. Yeah,
very cool. I'll have to get that in the reading queue.
Yeah, definitely. So you mentioned that you like nature and that it's played a major part in your shift. And how so?
Yeah, so that moment with my daughter, that was kind of a turning point for me. I don't know that I would have heeded that wake-up call if I was just checking the boxes like I was typically doing. One of the other pieces, because again, we were on the big island of Hawaii, we were just taking in that ocean air, the palm trees swaying, the beaches right there. And there was so many other amazing things she had done in those first 4 months. There was other times I had some pretty serious wake-up calls, like that should have been serious wake-up calls, and I didn't heed them. And it
can
was
you
that
explain
time.
On those? Can we come back and explain?
I could.
Okay.
I actually could. So yeah, one of them was the week after she was born. It was my first day going back into the office on that 100-mile drive.
Yeah.
I was on my way into the office. I was on a bridge, on a 2-lane bridge, two lanes going in the same direction, but there's barely any shoulder. And I'm driving back in. It's about 6:30, 6:45 in the morning, the Monday morning. My daughter's a week old. My tire on my truck blows out. I swerve right in front of this big rig. And somehow fate was on my side that day. And I didn't get hit. I mean, his horn was blaring. I can still feel it and see it. Just in my rearview mirror, trying to regain control of my vehicle as it's going through. And somehow I got to the there's a very, very narrow shoulder, like not a lot for vehicles, like barely enough for, you know, what would be considered a bicycle. But somehow I didn't get smashed. We're going about, you know, 55, 60 miles an hour.
Yeah.
He was on the downhill grade. I had a lot of things that weren't stacking, but somehow I just missed. And you would think that that would be wake up call.
You didn't hit the, and you didn't hit the side of the bridge either.
Didn't hit the side of the bridge. Tire was completely shredded, and I was able to get the vehicle off of the bridge, driving it. You know, it was completely shredded. It was nowhere safe for me to change the tire on the bridge.
Yeah, no, there isn't on the bridge.
And I still had probably a good 3/4 of a mile, 1/2 mile to go. So I get the vehicle off the bridge, all that. And you would think that that moment would be a wake-up call, but I got into the office, which was right on the other end of that bridge, kind of jumped into it. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, cool. You had a baby, your tire got shredded. And then all of a sudden I'm sucked into the tornado of all these, you know, life altering stories of like, oh my gosh, the paint color in this store was wrong. Like things that really weren't that significant. And I jumped because I was in construction at the time. And, you know, this tile came out. And the stone was a wrong color in this 1/8 of an inch square somewhere. And it's like the whole world is going to end.
I'm actually very familiar with this because my parents have been in fencing my whole life. And they own a fence company. So, I can relate. Yeah. You're just like, why are we even talking about this right now?
But that was what I jumped back into. And I just kind of put on my armor like I used to do every single day in that role, and just kind of was like, okay, turn the page. You got to get going. You got to let that go. And it never hit. And it should have hit as something that was significant. So over this 4-month period, I had little nuggets of warning signs. None of them clicked. But in that moment, getting back to the nature question, it was because I had taken that time. Nature, I found, is a great way to actually make us present. And I don't mean that you have to go on vacation to Hawaii. I don't mean that you have to go live in the, you know, in a forest or in a jungle for 20 years and not speak to people. I'm talking about, we've gotten so connected technologically, sometimes we lose sight of just taking in how amazing a sunrise is or a sunset, or just seeing the leaves blowing or noticing a bird flying by. But these little pieces that I found are actually ways to charge us. And some of the research that I've ended up finding out, there's a lot of research on this that's been taking place. There was a study in Cornell earlier this year that found spending as little as 10 minutes in nature, and this could be just going outside for a walk around your neighborhood, it actually improves our productivity. It improves our creative problem solving skills in all of these different elements, but we operate in a mindset of, I got to do more. I got to check more boxes. I got to go through this. And sometimes what I'm realizing is stepping away could be one of our greatest advantage. So I thought about all these things, and this was an area where I was like, this is really amazing. I wonder if this is relevant for others. So I've had the chance, it's something I'm going to be launching here. My TEDx talk is coming up in November, but one of the things I'm launching. And it's kind of in this vein of the importance of reconnecting with nature, just using it as a source to actually collaborate with.
And this is what I told Jared. He has to get me on one of these 10X, you know, platforms. I would love to join you or even be in the audience when you're up there. I mean,
one of these days, we'll see where it goes for this November talk. That'd be cool. So what I started doing was I actually just started looking at people that I think are just absolutely incredible in their own work that they're doing. And I started just trying to build relationships and interviewing different people. And I came to find out, like you see behind me, I'm a bassist. One of my idols, complete icons in the world of the instrument of the bass guitar, he's revolutionized. His name is Victor Wooten. And what I came to find out, I've always known this about him, but a big part of how he's accelerated on the instrument, everybody would think, oh, he's got to practice, he's got to do more of this. Part of his practice is animal tracking.
Huh.
He goes through animal tracking. He spends time in nature. Now, what he sees in the patterns of footprints on different properties being out in nature, for him, nature is music. And that's what he talks about. And that's going to be, you know, these are going to be some of the elements that I end up talking about in the talk. But I've had a chance we've become really good friends, and I've had the chance to interview him and several others of his caliber, 5-time Grammy Award-winning musician, right? I've best-selling authors on Wall Street Journal, New York Times best-selling authors. I had the chance to interview, and I've come to find it's not that they spend more time in that. It's actually they've been intentional about stepping away And that has been the seeds for some of their greatest ideas in their work. Yeah. In our environments that we're in, though, Amina, it pushes us towards this dynamic of you have to just keep going. And the what I'm realizing is one of the best ways to keep going is make sure that you're creating these little pauses. Because, you know, we'd never take a phone and expect it to run full bore if it had 2%. What would we do? We'd plug it back in. And nature serves that purpose in many different ways. And look, it could be as simple as taking a moment to just look out your window. I see your beautiful trees out there, right? Like Virginia is beautiful, like across the board. But just taking some time to cognitively soak that up, it actually charges us.
Yeah, I go outside all the time. Like if I can't concentrate, I'm like, I need to just go sit in the sun. And literally I have this beautiful big a porch here. And so I just go out there and just sit in the sun and just like think and just like just rest and not take any of my electronics. Yeah. And it does help. It's that separation away and being in nature. And I don't know if you've seen, but I do a lot of nature. I go on a lot of nature walks. I have a trail near my house. So I do use it. It's just been really hot lately. So I haven't really been out there. It's really overgrown too. Luckily I have a really great community that keeps it up, but I think we're all at the same point that it's just really hot. So yeah.
Yeah, we've been triple digits here this past weekend, so I feel your pain.
Yeah, it's a little bit intense. I try to get out there like in the bright early morning, but I usually only get like past my driveway. Like it's because it's so nice in the morning. You got all the birds chirping, and you're not quite ready. You're just taking it all in. So yeah, I haven't gone on the trail in the morning, even though I've been meaning to. I'm like, I want to go out the trail. No, this hasn't happened. So do you have a place, like a favorite place near you that you go walking or enjoy?
Yeah, so one of the things I love to get to when the kids and the family are growing up, there's an area called, there's one of the lakes up here, it's Lake Natoma. So we've gotten up there, we've gone kayaking there, there's cool trails to hike around. It's one of the coldest lakes in our region as well. So I actually do cold water plunging there and all that stuff. Do a little bit of meditative breathing and then jump in the water. I've been doing that for years and I found that's been just amazing getting in that. I mean,
that jump in cold water thing that everybody seems to be like calling their cold showers. You do the cold waters, right?
Yeah, I do. I've done cold showers for years. I mean, granted, when it's 100 degrees outside, the water's not all that cold. But the lake that we go to, even in the summer, when it's hot outside, I mean, your water temperature's still 54, 55 degrees and kind of going through that. And I've always just loved doing that. Like New Year's Day this year, 2020, we were out on the coast. So I did what I did was a 2020 plunge in the Pacific, it was about 55 degrees outside, and then the water temperature was a little bit colder than that, but it just felt so amazing and so charged and electrifying and kind of doing that. So I found that just recharges me and energizes me in different spurts regularly. So that's something that we enjoy doing locally, and even when I'm traveling, or used to be traveling a lot for work, I'd make sure, even if I'm in a big city, like get out, go walk. I used to go to New York quite a bit. And I just make sure that I get up early, get out. Even if you're in the city, you can see different little pockets of things that are going on and just take it in. There's a lot to see and a lot to take in.
Especially in New York. I've been there. We stayed a couple of days right in Times Square, me and my kids and family. And there was a lot of people, a lot of people. Like I couldn't ever imagine how many people could fit like on a sidewalk, but it's amazing. Yeah. And there, it's interesting because it's a total culture shock for me, being where there's probably the nearest person near me is like, I don't know, like 20 miles. So, it was just like, okay, well, this is different, but it was exciting. I really enjoyed my time in New York. So yeah.
Very much so.
So you do this 24 Strong, and so you help people build culture in their business?
Yeah, so 34 Strong, it's built on the Clifton Strengths Finder. That's not everything that we do, but the name comes from the fact that years ago when we started the company, we were doing a lot of work on the Clifton Strengths process. And that basically ties into this whole.
What is the Clifton Strength Process?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say here. So years ago, a gentleman named Dr. Donald Clifton, several decades ago, over six decades ago now at this point, he asked the question, what'll happen when we focus on what's right with people instead of fixating on what's wrong with them? That launched him into a decade of research alongside the Gallup organization. And he studied well over a million people, actually close to 2 million people. And what he was trying to figure out, Amina, was how talent naturally exists in people, those natural patterns of thought, feeling, and behavior that can be productively applied. What ended up emerging was there was these 34 themes, these 34 buckets of talent that exist in all people, in a ranked order from 1 through 34. And there's not the right talents to have or the wrong talents to have. They're all really unique to us in the order that they exist. In fact, the likelihood of somebody having their top 10 in the same order as another person is 1 in 6 billion. So it's a great tool, and that's not what we do. It's a foundational piece. It's one of the tools that we use. But years ago when we were starting the company, we really liked the concept of like, hey, there's all these 34 themes of talent, and all of them are created equal. So we can be strong by being 34 strong, by understanding that, leaning into that. The work that we do goes much deeper than that. It helps us to connect the dots for the managers, for the leaders of organization, on how do you actually build that culture. We want to build strengths-based cultures, but how do we actually go about moving the needle on that? How do we have the conversations with our employees, the one-to-ones, that will help create and sustain the employee engagement and not pivot us over to the disengagement components that we're talking about earlier?
Yeah. So you train the leadership in the organization on what to look for in people or what to attract to the organization?
We do a whole series of elements like that. So we really connect the dots. A lot of times it's starting with the leadership teams and thinking about what are my strengths, what are your strengths, how do those come together? Because we got to understand it first on a leadership level. Then we talk about it through the lens of what does this mean when we translate it from a strengths focus and understanding each other and how we communicate, how we connect. What does it mean when we go from that to a level of employee engagement? How do we have the conversation? So a lot of the work that we end up getting into is, you know, we've got different elements within the work that we do. Some of our clients will bring us in, be a whole long roadmap of things that we do. Others, they're really bringing us in to focus on their managers. This is an important piece. It's fascinating. Gallup actually has found, they had a book last year called It's the Manager. And they had in this book, they identified that over 70% of each employee's engagement is tied directly to their manager. People don't quit bad organizations. They quit what? Their bosses. Awesome. That's what it is. So we actually train managers on something they're not trained on, which is how do you actually engage your employees? So part of that for the managers is them taking that dive into their own strengths, understanding how they show up, that self-awareness. But how do we move from self-awareness to team awareness? How do we have those questions? And I give you a really simple question people can ask if they have teams, no matter how big or small your team is. But it's easy for us to overlook different people's learning styles, right? So a great question to ask any employer, maybe you're a solopreneur, but you're contracting with people, just ask a simple question. How do you learn best? Because a lot of times, what are we doing? We're playing a game of telephone, right? I tell you something, you tell it to somebody else, it goes to your 10 people. By the time it's the 10th person, it looks nothing like what I wanted. How did you get here? How do we get to these places? And it's because I set expectations for you, Amina, the way I would have set them for myself. I never spent the time working to figure out how to best meet you. That simple question, how do you best learn? And go deep there, ask people, well, give me examples of this. You can pivot how you're communicating to people on your teams that you lead and figure out how to connect those dots. Expectation setting. When we don't have clear expectations, my business partner, I love this quote that he always says, Brandon always says this, a confused mind does nothing. And it's on us as the leaders, who are we being that we're either putting the shine in people's eyes where they're like, oh, fully engaged, I got it, or putting the shine in their eyes like deer in headlights shine in their eyes, right?
There's I have no idea what you just said.
I have no idea what you just said, but I'm going to go ahead and give it a try, and I'm going to bring it back to you, and it's going to look completely different.
Completely from opera, yeah, exactly. That kind of reminds me of when I was doing Lyra. Well, no, it wasn't Lyra. It was silks. So what it is, it's aerial silks, is the silk that's up in the air, right? And you do these knots to tie yourself in and things like that. Well, the teacher that I had, they're all wonderful, lovely people, but they just ran through it. They're like, okay, and you're going to do like this. And they're like just demonstrating in front of our small little group. We only like four people. And you know, she just goes through it and everybody's like, yeah, I got it. And I was like, I have no idea what just happened. I was like, somebody like, okay, so let me go through the steps and you explain the next step, because that's the way I learn, especially when, you know, it's in that dynamic, because it, you know, when I'm looking at somebody, I can't reverse it in my mind, and I was like, I need to be in your spot and then you tell me, you know, what to do. And yeah, I can see where even people like in that, where they have to be demonstrated it, or even like need visuals, or I remember years ago I worked shortly for Intuit, which is the makers of QuickBooks and all that other stuff. But I remember, like, just to be in their company, their corporation, you know, there was so many different learning styles they implemented. So they were really good at it, because they did show the step-by-step. They showed even like they would get on the same phone call with you. And so you could definitely tell that there is some businesses that see that it isn't needed. It's needed to show these different methods. And this was like a 2-week, just you get paid just to learn, and you know, and then another company just throw you into the wolves, right? Just like, you'll figure it out, you know. And then people will ask, I don't know what to do, and get burnt out and end up leaving like a year later because they're just trying to struggle just to figure out what's going on. Yeah, so it's definitely important.
Very, very much so.
Yeah,
very much
so. Where does people get in contact with 34 Strong and you, and What would be the process in that?
Yeah, the best place to get in contact with us is visit 34strong.com. You can also check us out on Facebook, LinkedIn, the traditional social media channels. You can find out, you know, you can connect directly with me on those channels as well. So look for me at Darren Verasamy. I'm sure you can drop the spelling in the notes there.
I will. We're going through that.
Yeah, so we've got that going. 34 Strong's launching on that whole manager piece. We really want to help as many organizations, large businesses, small businesses alike. So we're launching our show next week. My business partner and I were just doing it, but it's called Manager Intelligence. So it's helping people to level up and giving you really short micro nuggets on what that is. And that's it's about a 20 to 25 minute show that it's launching actually tomorrow, the first one.
So you'll be able to see that. What's the platform it's launching on?
Oh, it's going to be on pretty much all of your podcast media channels that you can consume. So anywhere you can consume podcasts.
Is it a podcast, or is it YouTube, or is it like?
It's a podcast. Yeah, it's a podcast. So it's just going to be the audio links there. So wherever you consume podcasts, that's going live there. So you'll find out more about that. My upcoming TED Talk, if you want to stay connected that way, my personal website, DarrenVerasamy.com, is going to be going live later this month. So a lot of those interviews as well that I've conducted for that will be coming up in the months ahead.
Very so cool. Do you have a date that you're going to be doing that?
I would say right now it's in the works. So we'll target by August 1st. So we're wrapping up some of the finishing elements there.
Will it be like you're on stage? Or will it be?
The TEDx talk. It's supposed to be on stage. Yeah. So it's supposed to be November 7th. And be a real actual TEDx event. It was moved. Yeah, it was supposed to be in 2 weeks. Actually, I'm sorry. It was supposed to be this Saturday. That's when it was supposed to be. Yeah. It got moved to November. We're just going to have to see where everything goes.
Yeah.
And we'll figure it out. So it's been moved, and we're going to do the best. The event is going to happen. It just might get moved again, or it might get moved to a virtual format. I don't know. I'm just...
Yeah.
To speak. So we'll figure it out.
That's, we'll figure it out. We'll put the links up when we know, right? So, yeah. Right. So guys, I do want to point out here that all of Darren's information will be in the podcast as well as the YouTube channel under Amina.media. So make sure you do check out the comments below if you're on the YouTube, or you look into the comments on whatever platform you're listening to this on. Right now, I know we're streaming on 9 different broadcast systems, so you can get the links there by to any of those by going to anchor.fm/oneup, and you can go to your favorite broadcast station. Now, if you have Apple Podcasts, which is like been number one forever, I think it actually pretty much started the idea of podcasts. Would you say that, Darren? I think,
you know, I don't even know. That's outside of my strength zone. I don't know the answer to that question.
I looked it up. It said it was like it started in the late 90s or something. I was just like, what? It's really been that long? It was like, yeah. And if you're a part of Apple Podcasts, I do have a direct link to that by just going to amina.fm. So super simple for that one. So yeah, guys, thank you for joining on the live. I do want to point that out. And Darren, do you have anything else that you would like to finish off your talk here today and share with everyone?
Yeah, I'll leave you with a quote that's been really powerful, I think, recently, just as we're leading in times of uncertainty and leading strong in times of uncertainty. That's at the core of what 34 Strong's work is actually pivoting and focusing right now. And it's a Maya Angelou quote. And it's something along the lines of, people won't always remember what you said. They won't always remember what you did, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. So as we think about that, as you're going through and working through challenges, uncertainty, as we're all going through those elements, if we can start by thinking about how we're making people feel, that will help create certainty in times of uncertainty. And on that note, I wish that everybody can lead strong in whatever they're doing and, you know, show up as the best version of yourself, but really think about that piece. It's powerful. It will build your culture. It will strengthen your culture and your teams, even in the most treacherous of times.
I really love that. Yeah, that's it's a really good quote. I have heard of it before, and it's a perfect way to sign off, should I say. Yeah, it's perfect. Thank you so much, Darren, for coming on. It's been a joy actually meeting face-to-face here, and I look forward to hearing more about your endeavors moving forward and your projects. Stay in touch.
Thank you so much. Do the same. I really appreciate it. Take care, everybody.
Thank you. Take care.